tonight I would like to talk about we're going to explore Mara, the evil one, also known as Mara the deceiver. Mara in the Pali text, the Nikayas, is kind of the personification of evil. And as we listen to this stuff tonight, part of the reason I wanted to chant that long chant we did, Affirming Faith and Mind, is to remind us to give a special attention to such distinctions as good and evil, inside and outside. Is Mara within us? Is Mara outside us? Does that matter? Let me preface this by saying I'm not particularly interested in exploring the question of whether or not there is any evil deity with a body and mind outside there who's Mara. Which is the way it sounds in a lot of the Pali text, which is some of what we're going to look at tonight. Mara in the text repeatedly tempts the Buddha, tries to turn him away from both before and after his own enlightenment experience, to turn him away from those paths. And Mara harasses him and tries to frighten him and takes on various guises and forms. Mara also has three daughters known as Tanha, Arati, and Raga, whose names mean craving, discontent, and lusting. These are the three daughters of the evil one. To begin with, I'm going to read little bits from the Mara Samyutta. This is from the Samyutta Nikaya, which is the connected discourses of the Buddha. And this is the connected discourses with Mara. What I particularly want to pay attention to is Buddha's response to Mara, which is it's a version of always the same. Mara the evil one approached the Blessed One and addressed him in verse. Having deviated from the austere practice by which men purify themselves, being impure, you think you're pure. You have missed the path of purity. So this comes at a time when, after Buddha has set down the paths of self-mortification, of extreme asceticism. And then right after Mara the evil one addresses him in verse, it says, then the blessing one, having understood this is Mara, the evil one, replies to him in verse. Now, the excellent part is this part that comes at the end of each section of these discourses. Then Mara, the evil one, realizing the blessed one knows me, the fortunate one knows me, sad and disappointed, disappeared right there. So each time Mara appears, Buddha says, I see you. You're Mara. I recognize you. And then Mara is like, ah, dang. And then he disappears. And I always love that Mara, when Mara disappears, he's always sad and disappointed. Then Mara, the evil one, wishing to arouse fear, trepidation, and terror in the Blessed One, manifested himself in the form of a giant king elephant and approached the Blessed One. His head was like a huge block of steatite. I don't know what that is. His tusks were like pure silver. His trunk was like a huge plow pole. Then the Blessed One, having understood, this is Mara, the evil one, addressed him in verse. Enough, evil one, with that trick of yours. You're defeated, end maker. Then Mara, the evil one, realizing the Blessed One knows me, sad and disappointed, disappeared right there. Enough, evil one, with that trick of yours. Now, these responses, you know, they can be, how does Mara appear to us? So Mara is coming not as an evil one, but as a big scary elephant, like tromping down, you know, charging at the Buddha, going to run him over. And he goes, I see you, Mara. Enough with that trick. Enough with that your trick of trying to make me fall into the trap of fear, or the trap of these other things, craving, lusting, discontent. And so one thing that I want to invite you all to look at in your practice, in your lives, is how is it that Mara appears to you? And, you know, Mara can take any of these forms, and we're gonna look at a few more in the scriptures. But there's so much equanimity in the Buddha's response. Just realizing, that's Mara, the evil one. Enough. Or even I see you. You know, and this is what we talk about. This is the equanimity practice we talk about in terms of inviting our demons to sit next to us. We don't try to chase our demons away. We don't suppress the demons down. But when all of these, whenever grasping mind or judging mind or our inner critic or anything that comes up about our own inadequacy, about, you know, we wish we were elsewhere, about the world should be different, about he's breathing too loud, welcome. See you. Please join me. You know, and then when we invite our demons to sit down, they in fact, sad and disappointed, often disappear right there. Then Mara, the evil one, wishing to arouse fear, trepidation, and terror in the Blessed One, approached the Blessed One and, not far from him, displayed diverse lustrous shapes, both beautiful and hideous. Then the Blessed One, having understood, this is Mara, the evil one, addressed him in verse. Enough, evil one, with that trick of yours. You're defeated, end maker. Then Mara, the evil one, disappeared right there. And so one thing that's important here is Mara appears in diverse shapes, both beautiful and hideous. And this reflects the ways that we need to practice equanimity, not just in the face of the hideous, the things that arouse our aversion, but also equanimity in the face of the beautiful as well, which doesn't mean that we don't experience beauty or see it. Just as we recognize the hideous as hideous, we recognize the beautiful as beautiful. Then Mara, the evil one, manifested himself in the form of a giant king serpent and approached the Blessed One. Its body was like a huge boat made from a single tree trunk, its hood like a large brewer's sieve, its eyes like the large bronze dishes of Kosala, its tongue darting out from its mouth like flashes of lightning emitted when the sky thunders, the sound of its breathing in and out like the sound of a smith's bellow filling the air. And the Blessed One understood, this is Mara, the evil one. So Mara assails us in all kinds of ways. Mara really gives Buddha no rest, no quarter. In fact, one night, when the Blessed One, having spent much of the night walking back and forth in the open, washed his feet, entered the dwelling and lay down on his right side in the lion's posture, with one leg overlapping the other, mindful and clearly comprehending, having attended to the idea of rising, Mara, the evil one, approached him and said, "What? You sleep? Why do you sleep? What's this? You sleep like a wretch, thinking the hut's empty, you sleep. What's this? You sleep when the sun has risen?" That's another voice of Mara, the evil one, you know? Does that voice, you know, sound anything like you've heard in your head, you know, on any kind of occasion? And the Blessed One responds, "The awakened one sleeps. Why should this concern you, Mara?" Then Mara, the evil one, sad and disappointed, disappeared right there. Mara shattered a number of huge boulders not far away from them. The Blessed One clearly understood, "This is Mara, the evil one. I see you." You know, and I find this practice of just equanimously and quietly recognizing when you're seeing Mara to be really freeing. For me, you know, seeing when I've gotten all, like, you know, pushed in, entrenched into whatever, into my fear, into my discontent, into my mood, into my sleepiness, into my ranting against myself for being sleepy or something like that, to recognize, this is Mara. See you. Oh, and in the middle of this Mara Samyutta, in section 13, in which it talks about splinter, there's something else to be gleaned that I wanna talk to you guys about. The Blessed One's foot had been cut by a stone splinter. Severe pains assailed the Blessed One's bodily feelings that were painful, racking, sharp, piercing, harrowing, disagreeable. But the Blessed One endured them, mindful and clearly comprehending, without becoming distressed. Then the Blessed One, the pain was painful, racking, sharp, piercing, harrowing, disagreeable. So this is really very, very clear that the Buddha was experiencing pain. This wasn't nothing. You know, and so this is a reminder that nothing about our Dharma practice, nothing about even Buddha's enlightenment, means that these physical experiences of pain, even racking pain, don't occur. And yet, the Blessed One endured them, mindful and clearly comprehending. So that's the other side. He's not suppressing them. He's not ignoring them. He's looking at them and seeing them clearly, without judgment. And Mara says, "What are you? Are you feeling sorry for yourself? Do you lie down as if you're drunk on poetry?" The Blessed One says, "I do not lie in a daze or drunk on poetry. Having reached the goal, I am rid of sorrow. Alone in secluded lodging, I lie down full of compassion for all beings. I do not lie awake in dread, nor am I afraid to sleep. The nights and days do not afflict me. I see for myself no decline in the world. Therefore, I can sleep in peace, full of compassion for all beings." And Mara, the evil one, disappeared right there. And the last section from the Nikayas that I want to read is yet another one of... So Mara appears in myriad guises, 10,000 million zillion guises, continually changing, ever shifting. Not just scary things like snakes and exploding boulders and elephants charging. But here's a totally different one. Then Mara, the evil one, approached the Blessed One and addressed him with these verses. O great hero, great in wisdom, blazing forth with power and glory, I worship your feet, one with vision, who has overcome all enmity and fear. O great hero who has vanquished death. So that's also Mara, the evil one, you know, and we can see this in our own grandiosity or in somebody else who feeds into our own sense of self-importance. That too is Mara, the deceiver, pushing us away from the equanimity of true peace that beyond aversion and clinging. Shifting gears a little bit, I want to look at Mara as the shadow. The shadow is one is a piece of the Jungian archetype, the Jungian ways of talking about the human personality. Part of the personality, another part is the persona. So the shadow is the parts that we don't want to identify with, the persona or the bad and the dark parts. The persona is the face we often present. And one of the things that we tend to do is we tend to believe that we're the persona and not the shadow. Or we believe that we're the shadow. We believe that the shadow is our true self, and we're fooling everybody with our persona. That this thing that's in front is deceiving everybody, and this is what's real. But they both have equal reality. They're all you. And so I'm going to read you a little bit from Wendy Egyoku Nakao, who is the abbot of the Zen Center of Los Angeles, which is where Maizumi Roshi taught for a while, if any of you know him. The true self is everything. Nothing is excluded from who we truly are. For most of us, this is an intriguing idea. However, we usually don't fully experience and accept this as reality. Each of us excludes many things that cannot possibly be myself. These excluded parts of oneself, these "this can't be me because I'm not like that" parts, are disowned in the shadow. The shadow is an inconvenient truth, often surfacing at a most inopportune moment. A pitfall for Zen practitioners is believing that practice enables us to bypass all that we believe we are not and should not be, such as among other things, what we just saw there, being racked by pain in this moment. Or the subtler things that we believe are the deep, dark secrets of ourselves that prove decisively that we can't possibly be Buddhas just as we are, that our Buddha nature is fundamentally tainted by the evilness of our shadow, of our secrets. And remember, in the Gatha of Atonement, when we atone for all our evil karma, the evil karma created from our beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, that's the only evil in Buddhism, is the evil or unwholesome or harming karma, action, and their effects, created by greed, anger, and ignorance. That's the way all evil is created. In ourselves, in our own life, that's evil, and also in the more extreme examples, Hitler, Stalin, Saddam, or Osama, all of these people, insofar as they create evil, George Bush, I also want to add onto that list with Saddam. Insofar as they create evil, the place it comes from in them is always going to be grasping, aversion, believing their thoughts to be truths, believing them to be separate from separatable. Those things are ignorance. Bypass all the things we believe we are not and should not be. So, part of being a Dharma practitioner, part of really following this path is looking at ourselves and seeing all the things that we are. Thich Nhat Hanh has a very famous poem in which he talks about how he is the... I don't remember any of it. But he talks about some pirate who abducts a young girl and rapes her, and you know, some image of great callous evil. And Thich Nhat Hanh says of that pirate, "That is me." Or we might go the other way. We can identify. Instead of not looking at the real and present ways that are part of the things that we do to create harm in the world for ourselves, for all beings, we also become blind to the light energy of ourselves. You know, and this is what happens when we believe we're only our shadow. We can identify our disowned light energies by looking at the people we have excessive admiration for. In these instances, the very best of oneself is projected onto the others as qualities we admire. We might admire the Buddha or the Zen teacher, all the while not realizing that these are our very own qualities. Sometimes it is more difficult to see our own light energies than the so-called dark. Owning light energies is scary because we realize we need to take full responsibility for the vast potential of our Buddhahood. That's a really great sentence. We need to take full responsibility for the vast potential of our Buddhahood. And part of the value of the Gatha of Atonement, when we point to evil, so on the one hand we're saying, "I see you, Mara," but as I always say about pointing, you know, there's three fingers pointing back at you. And so when we point at evil, we're seeing our evil, our harm-creating shadow. And that's why we can take responsibility for it, because it's all inside. It's all ours. It's all it. In addition to our beliefs that spiritual practice will bypass or eliminate shadow, we may believe that the shadow energy is somehow inherently bad or wrong, rather than experiencing the neutrality of energy itself and seeing clearly how we add value judgments to feelings and experiences. All of it becomes more complex if we believe that we are fundamentally not a worthy person who does not measure up to our idea of Buddhahood. Rather than experiencing the neutrality of energy itself. So even in this, in that one with the painful example of the splinter, even those things, the painful and racking and all of the rest, even those are neutral. It doesn't mean they aren't painful. It doesn't mean they aren't racking. But that energy, that experience of "this is racking" is itself neutral. Sometimes when I got this first tattoo on my foot, which says patience, I was doing zazen as the tattoo guy was doing it, and as I was doing it, it didn't really hurt. I was just experiencing that you know, that sensation of this needle kind of going in and out of my sole of my foot. And I was just sitting there breathing the neutrality of that energy. But as soon as my mind went, oh, this doesn't really hurt a whole lot, and then I immediately experienced a lot of pain because I separated myself from it, and then the reflexive reaction to those neutral sensations came in so quick, and I mistook it for pain, or I experienced the neutral sensation of pain as aversive. And so this is what we practice in Zazen. This is why we practice noticing when our thought has drifted away from our intention to sit here, being with the breath, counting a breath, just sitting or listening or whatever it is our practice is. Why we try to see that happen, you know, and see our mind move away from this attention earlier and earlier, and then start following its path. Because when we see that, what we're seeing is our reflexive tendencies and eventually this time between when your mind drifts away and when you notice that it's shifted away and you're able to return, this goes from initially a very long period to maybe shorter and shorter, and then eventually they arise more or less in the same time. And so you can see the impulse to start thinking, or you can see the the judging thought that judges this neutral sensation in your foot to be pain. You can see that arise in the moment that it does, and you can see that judgment, this is pain, as just a thought, empty and, you know, boundless, like all the rest. So I'm going to wrap up with a little bit here from Jan Chosen Bays. This is in the current issue of Buddha Dharma. She's the teacher who last February I went to sit with at Great Vows in Monastery. And she says, I've noticed that Mara talks to the Buddha in a familiar voice, the one we call, that Mara talks to the Buddha in a familiar voice, the one we call the inner critic. The inner critic and its partner, the outer judge, are impartial. Whatever comes into their field of awareness, they criticize it. Resting meditation or much needed sleep, one-pointed concentration or drowsiness, determined attempts to crack the koan mu or practice of the gentle inner smile, all are subject to attack. And that's what we see, that the Buddha, that Mara, he gets up and put his face about sleeping, about not sleeping, about indulging, about abandoning asceticism. There are no bloody battles with the forces of evil in the Pali Canon. And those bloody battles in which good triumphs over evil in some epic and final way, that's actually the heritage of Zoroastrianism, which influenced Judaism and Christianity and Islam. But we don't see that in Buddhism. Evil arises, evil is penetrated. I see it. And it disappears. But it's never conquered and killed once and for all. There are no bloody battles. When Mara appears in one of his many guises, all the Buddha has to do is recognize him. As soon as the Buddha says, Mara, is that you? The evil one slinks away, sad and disappointed, saying, the Blessed One knows me. If we want to combat evil empires, our fundamental work is to recognize the earliest stirrings of evil or unwholesome thoughts in our own minds and let them wither away from inattention. We must also recognize the early arising of thoughts that are good or wholesome and help them grow. That is it. Does anyone...